Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Fighter's Voice with Don McGuire, presented by Finished MMA and the United Way Merced.
It's your boy Sloan Bone of the Mo Thugs Movement, part of the Bone Thugs and Harmony family tree, the 86ers brand ambassador. Check it out though, listen. In a world full of followers, be proud to be different. Be an 86er. So what I need y'all to do is go to the 86ers.net. We got the dopest apparel, men and women. Everything you need for a fresh start. I'm talking tees, zip-ups, tanks, hoodies, and the best hats at a price nobody can match. I'ma ask you this though. What do your clothes say about you? If you don't know, come to the 86ers.net and find yourself out. And a special shout out to Don McGuire, the host of The Fighter's Voice. Salute, big homie.
Just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. 'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of Texas, from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to LA, there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand. There ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome to The Fighter's Voice. I'm your host, Don McGuire. Much love to Lee Greenwood for giving me the rights to use his music. Such a tremendous song, and we're a great nation. We need to start acting like it. Everybody, it's good to be back. We're back on a Wednesday night. Tuesday just wasn't working out for us, so we decided to jump to Wednesday night, see if we can get the numbers back up with all the political aspects going on. And wouldn't you know it, I picked the vice presidential debate to do the show on, the same I did with the presidential debate. You know, everybody deserves an opportunity to hear something other than politics, and they need to be able to look at life in a much more optimistic view. Joe Denny's running a couple minutes late here. We're going to be on with him in about 3 minutes. You know, I want to thank my sponsor, one of my sponsors, Juan Martinez at Finished MMA. You know, he's truly had my back throughout the years. He's always come through thick or thin. You know, we met many years ago. That man gained my respect, and he has sponsored the show ever since, and he's always believed in me. And, you know, I'm forever indebted to you, man. You and your family. You come out of pocket just so the sport can hear the fighters and you can share the voice. See, this is what's tremendous about this show is, yeah, my bills are paid a year in advance, but I make no money off of this show. I do this show because I spent the last 24 years of my life dedicating, working, dying in this sport because I love it so much. And how can you not give a fighter a voice when they truly deserve each and every aspect as they give it all so we can have something to love and enjoy? We've got a hell of a show for you tonight. We got Joe Denny Stevenson coming on in about, hopefully about 2-3 minutes. Kind of got into it with him a little bit earlier about it, but then at the half an hour mark, maybe a couple minutes later, we got Swayze Valentine, the first and only UFC cut woman. Tremendous story behind her. Tremendous, tremendous backstory. You know, everybody that knows me and that's been following my show for 16 years, you realize I'm great at asking questions, but I suck at filling dead air time, but I promise we're going to get there. You know, the thing of it is this show means so much to me. When Dean Lassiter came to me and said, keep it going, when COVID first struck the country, I was going to shut it down. And you know what? I'm glad I didn't, because it continued to give the fighters a voice. It allowed them to share and express who they are. And you know what? I'm honored they chose my show. Well, he said 10 after. It's 7 after. I don't know if I should give him another minute or two. Or should Oh, I can't wait to talk to Joe. You know, Joe is a tremendous warrior. But he's even better at building world champions. And this last weekend or so, he did that. And Juan Archuleta, a young man that I've been having on my show since the beginning of his MMA career. It was tremendous to see him become a world champion in Bellator. To get that opportunity is tremendous. And to see him do it, man, it's, the guy's story is just great. You know, and Joe has his hands on Jamal Pogues and so many others. He dealt with Dominic Reyes on his way up. I mean, this guy is just a tremendous coach and a tremendous warrior. We're going to go ahead and try to give him a call now. If we get him, we'll get him the first time. If not, then we'll try again. Here we go.
Hello?
What's up, Professor Stevenson? How you doing, sir? Can you hear me, bro? I don't know if we lost him or not.
Can you, Don?
Hey, I can hear you now. You there?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, that was just the worst reception area. I'm good now. There'll be like one other spot.
Oh, it's all good, brother. You know, I was just talking about, because I was kind of buying a little bit of time, you know, the tremendous attributes that not only you had in the sport, but you've passed on to other individuals, and you still currently are. But three gentlemen come to mind. one of them won a world championship. You know, you look at Dominic Reyes, you look at Jamal Pogues, you look at Juan Archuleta. What does it mean for Joe Stevenson to see his hard work, his determination, and his knowledge pay off through these fighters?
Well, it feels really good. You know, it's something that you have to earn to get these guys to the positions they are in. But, it's double-edged sword. Like, it's also, not double-edged sword. It's they have to do it, too. It's, you can't just be a great coach can take a person and make them better, but if that person is truly going to be great, sacrifice, you know, their time, they have to sacrifice their bodies, they have to sacrifice a lot of the experience in life with family and things like that to be successful. So, it's awesome, but I don't really focus on anything that's happening right now, because I know that the moment that you settle, the moment that you're like, oh man, I did this, or the moment you're like, oh, I've done what I wanted to do, then you really don't grow anymore. There's no reason to grow or to thrive, to try to do better.
You know, Professor, how much of yourself do you see in these fighters? The three that I mentioned, I know you see yourself in all your fighters because they're like your kids, but how much of yourself do you see in, per se, like Jamal Pogues or Juan Archuleta? You know, how much of yourself do you see in them?
Well, a lot of times when you see the technique, it makes you smile and just so happy. But, you know, there's more fear than that. Is you don't want them, just like your kids, you don't want them to make the same mistakes you made.
I truly feel you. Talking about kids, you know, I always go all over the place anyway. You know, we've been in some crazy times, and we're not really going to get into that because I really don't. I've had my fill of the crazy times, bro. But how much of a significance or difference has it made for you as a father with your son in the military?
Oh, wow. I'm just so proud of Joey. You know, he's a 0331, which is machine gunner, like with the 50 cal and stuff like that. He went infantry. He got such a high score in his ASVAB, and he's so proud of the position that he was able to earn. That every time I get to talk to him, I text him almost every other day, and tell him I love him and I'm proud of him. But it's also scary because we're living crazy times with people making horrible choices, so that part's scary, but I know that he's surrounded by other people that are striving to be the best. It's kind of like fighting. It's, you know, you want to surround yourself with the best team possible and the best people that are going to help you achieve and the best coach that's going to help you. And I feel like the United States Marine Corps, you know, everyone there is his brother, and once a Marine, always a Marine. And man, I'm just so proud of him. I wanted to be a Marine when I was in high school. It was either Marine or fighting, and I started fighting and competing, and I just was like, well, I need to focus on this. Like, I am absolutely so proud of him. I literally wear my USMC hat every day of my life.
I would be ecstatic too, bro. I'm not going to lie. I mean, but let's kind of, I'm going to kind of ask you, you know, I do this to you every time. I kind of want to ask you an elephant in the room question because, you know, I'm 56. You're getting a little bit up there in age. You know, these are paths we've never walked on before. You know, where do you see the sport now compared to where it was, and do you think the sport will come back to what we knew it as before?
Well, God willing, God willing, we'll see the sport. I'm sorry, that was an alarm for a call time. God willing, this sport will, first of all, it's grown. And just like we all said, like in the 90s, we were like, man, this is going to be the biggest sport ever. And it's the fastest growing sport now. Like, it can be considered the biggest sport, especially with, like, ratings of other sports getting, like, too political and going down. You talk about such a great platform. What the sport really needs is not to be prize fighting and to be a true sport, you know, like, don't leave it up to the judges. Well, how come that's even a factor? Why isn't there a criteria that we all are aware of per round to keep the judges and say, wait a minute, this judge totally gave this fight to the wrong person because he didn't follow the criteria. Right now, I think that's a big thing that needs to happen. I think a big thing that needs to happen is the fighters need to not have to, like, try to push people down as they come up. They counter vault, but promoters kind of push that, you know, like, they want you to be talkative and say all this. I think if everyone just focused on the positive, it would help a lot of the people surrounding it say, oh, wait a minute, this is just a great sport and it needs to be treated as such. You know, I wish there could be teams. I really liked that old team format that they had a long time ago. And I think that would help it become more of a sport where people can't dodge and fight. It's hard. You think about boxing, right? A fan asked me the other day, what's the greatest fighter of all time? And I fall back on saying, you know, Rocky Marciano is one of the best because he literally fought everyone. And there was no building back then. There was not as much, anyway, building of managers, of fighters, and protecting them and doing all this stuff. It was just about fighting. You look at, like, Cesar Chavez. You look at all these other guys that have done such a great thing, and they would fight anyone, any place, any time. It's hard to not still be able to enjoy that. There's so many fights that people want to see happen, and people are scared of what might happen to them because, like, well, I want to be this person. I want to be that person. I want to be, like, the greatest of all time, and I got to stay undefeated, and that's too much of a risky fight for me. And I guarantee if finances are there and the security for people's families and insurance and retirement and things were there, people would be more apt to just fight and not have to worry about protecting their career, or protecting not so much their career, but their record.
You know, the sport has changed so much since you came up, and it's just crazy. You know, I was watching a show the other day, and someone had brought up the idea that, you know, it's more cost-effective for the sport not to have fans in certain aspects. It's more cost-effective. They said we might be looking at the new normal as far as the sport is concerned. I would tend to disagree with that, but as you know, it's not going to be fully operational if anytime soon, but they're saying 2021, you know, and that's not too far off.
Can I be honest with you? That's just a bunch of BS. That's the same fact as the COVID thing. You can go to Super Walmart, buy all this stuff, but the mom and pop shops that were selling stuff have to close. You know, like, that's just a bunch of BS. That's like, not wanting to involve the fans is the fact that now those smaller shows that were such a developing figure are getting hurt. If you don't have a TV deal, you can't throw a fight because you can't get sponsors. At least before, you could count on the fans to help finance a card because the promoter wasn't going to be taking such a risk. And it did give a chance for a local fighter that had a lot of public interest to be built up from the ground up. So I think that's, yes, it could be the new norm because people will let it happen, but it definitely shouldn't be the new norm. You talk about cost effectiveness, you know, the UFC talked about huge gates where they were making millions. For sure, that's, it's not, doesn't make more sense. Maybe, no, I can't even think why that would make more sense. Insurance? Like, they don't want to pay insurance for a building?
Right. You know, that, well, that's why I asked you the question, because it was kind of dumbfounding to me, but a lot of businesses are starting to think that way. You look at, even jump out of the sport, you look at the restaurants, it's, they're saying it's more cost-effective for them just to run a drive-thru or carry-out than it is to staff all those employees, and I think that's what they were referencing or referring to. You know, and the thing of it is, you and I both know, as a fight fan, as a fighter, or any aspect of the sport, you need that thickness of the air. You need that crowd there. That's what completes the sport. You know, for the people that are just fans that per se of TV and they never actually been to an event or worked in the sport, they don't get it like we do. That the essence of the sport is for that arena to be packed.
And I understand people that will read books and say, well, I got a great feeling, but you got those great feelings from those books because you were able to relate that with other life experiences. One of the best feelings I've ever experienced was feeling the energy at a UFC of 15, 17,000 people yelling, screaming, not even when I was fighting. That happened when I was fighting, but just going to watch. You don't feel that energy anywhere else. It's like going to a football game where you really like, you know, like it's a packed crowd. You're not going to experience that. And the truth is, America is based, a lot of it, you know, is entertainment. And the fact that to keep the people happy, you need activities that they can pour their emotions in, and they can care, they can be there. When you don't put that there, it just kind of dries it out a little bit. For sure, the commentators actually really help. They've been doing a good job of carrying certain fights and stuff and keeping it interesting. But I was a little bit for hearing the crowd boo and hearing the crowd yell and being a part of that. That's a big, big thing.
Oh, it truly is. You know, you and I had a conversation via a post, but, you know, we talk away from the show and away from Facebook. And I appreciate your sentiment as far as me setting my cameras down. You know, sometimes in life we have to know when to walk away. I've been blessed 24 years in this sport. I've been one of the top photographers in this sport for a long time, and it was a hard decision. It was a very hard decision. But like I told you, I would rather go out on top than go out an afterthought, and you commended me on that. You know, Professor...
Well, because I wish more people would do that. Like, I wish I would have.
Well... You're meant to be in this sport for the rest of your life. I mean, I'll do the show till the day I die, but, you know, I appreciate that. You know, you look at your life in a quick synopsis. You're a great practitioner. You're a hell of a fighter. You're a great trainer. You're a great mentor. You played a huge part of Kingdom. You've added so many variances to yourself. When you look at the circuit, certain academics of who Joe Stevenson is, did you ever surmise that you would accomplish so much and create so much in not just the sport, but in your family's life and everybody who surrounds you? Did you realize that you were going to create such a persona to who you are that others are looking up to you as a mentor?
Well, I mean, when you set out to do something, I don't do anything half-heartedly. You know, if if I was walking upstairs next to a good friend and they were like, let's race up the stairs, I'm not going to not give it my 100%. And I think when you do that with everything you do in life, it sets you up to be successful, you know, like you give it your best. Well, why? Because you want to be the best. Well, why? Because you want a big reason is for my kids to see it. So, I mean, it is to be expected when you do your very best that you get good results with enough time, granted, in anything. However, I think there's just so much more to do and so much more to be a part of. And so I really don't really think about that stuff because I don't want to ever be caught up in, you know, the past. I'd rather focus on the future and not forget the past.
Yeah. You know, I so appreciate that. You know, I look at me and my sponsor were talking about this, how you and I bugged you and Juan Archuleta back in the day to make that video for my show a couple years back. You know, how was it for you to see Juan Archuleta win that world title?
Man, it was such a good feeling. But I had told him, you know, it's just the first step. I got to talk to him afterwards. It was his birthday. But that's not his goal, is to win one title. Oh, no. There's going to be much more to it. And it was important just to remind him, okay, chapter one done. You know, we finished our King of the Cage chapter. We finished our King of the Cage 4 or 5 chapters. Now we finished our Bellator chapter one. It's time to go to Bellator chapter 2 and Bellator chapter 3. I think that there'll be many more volumes for this man. And I'm excited to be part of it. And I'm very happy to see him doing what he set out to do. Because now you're seeing him focus on Juan. Whereas jumping into a 45-pound tournament necessarily was, you know, for everyone and the fans especially to get to see a great match and things. And it was priceless experience. But it's just going to go up from here.
He's just getting started. He's just getting started. People don't even know. You know, it was tremendous for me because I got to interview the man from the very beginning stages of his career. And to see this aspect of the sport, many people don't know the gratifying aspects of it, but I truly was proud. I can only imagine how you were. You know, relationships in this sport are truly something to hold in high regard. You know, you look at Tim Elliott, you look at Zach Cummings, James Krause, you, Juan, Syed Awad, and many. What does brotherhood truly mean for Joe Stevenson? What does it add to you, sir?
Well, you don't get to pick your family. You know, your family's your family. But you get to pick your brothers. You don't use the term loosely, and I think it's an important thing. And because the fact of knowing that somebody is there with you and understands what you're going through is priceless. You know, how many times have you wanted advice on a relationship, and you ask somebody that you care about that has been there and done that, and their advice has been so insightful that it's astounding. It will literally, it's considered priceless.
Yeah, it truly is. You know, Professor, that's what I consider our friendship. You know, I know you were running a little bit late on tonight's show. I'm not going to keep you on for an hour like I usually do. I actually have a tremendous guest coming up after you in Swayze Valentine, the first female and only female cut woman in the UFC. You know, Professor,
can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
My phone, when I restarted my car, it sometimes jacks up. I apologize. I love Swayze. She's an amazing person. She's a great person. She's a great cut woman. And she's just all around. She's the type of person that you can count on as a good person, like, to do the right thing for the right reason and to do her best.
You know, I'm stoked, to be honest with you. But the thing about life is you always bring brightness into the dark. And you're always a glorified man. And you don't hold back, just like with Juan and Jamal and everybody else, that you're a God-fearing man. If you had a message to the people of America and the people across the world that are listening to the show right now, Professor, what would your words of encouragement or godly thought be before we kind of wrap things up here, sir?
Well, I mean, in these times where it's definitely so much negativity around, you know, the whole thing, just like in a fight, you have to believe you can win the whole time. I mean, how you feel is up to you. I mean, life can really suck. Certain things can really happen just to bring it down and bring you to your knees. But how you allow that to affect you is going to be up to you. And I've always been the type of person that will pray throughout the middle of the day and just give thanks. And it really helps having somebody in your corner. Talk about a great coach. You know, the Lord can really, really help you when you feel like you need somebody to hold your hand. It's like being a child. Sometimes you're holding your kid's hand and they let go and they're going to fall, but they don't realize you're holding their hand and you're going to make sure they don't fall. And that's how it is with the Lord.
Amen. You know, Professor, I admire you so much. You know, you humble me by coming on the show and you share your fighters on my show, but we've become brothers throughout the years. And I just want to say how much that truly means to me. I'm gonna pass the mic to you because I know you got some new mats and I know there's a lot of people looking for places to train. So I'm going to hand the mic over to you if you want to give Big Dan Henderson's a shout out or any other aspects, sir. The floor is yours.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Don. Well, if you guys are in Victorville and you want to wrestle and do jiu-jitsu or train some MMA or do kickboxing, feel free to come down to Cobra Kai and check us out. We're open 6 days a week. And if you're in Temecula, they're also open 6 days a week, and you've got world-class coaches, world-class fighters in there every day. So, I hope I can help people achieve their dreams when I coach them. I hope I can push them to reach their goals and teach them the best way possible to do that.
You're such a tremendous man. Professor, thank you so much for coming on the show tonight, brother. You have a good night.
No.
And God bless you.
No worries. Tell Swayze I said hi. God bless you, buddy.
I will, buddy. Love you, man.
Bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was my homie, but we're running a couple minutes behind, and I've been waiting for this interview for a long time, so here we go. Hopefully I can do her justice.
Hello?
Hey, Swayze, this is Don McGuire with The Fighter's Voice. How you doing?
Doing great.
Before I forget, Joe Daddy Stevenson said to tell you hello and hi, and so first and foremost, I'll do that. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, yay,
on the show,
I miss him so much. Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, you know, you're kind of a part of the foundation of the sport. You know, a lot of people want to take it at a different angle. You've never been on my show before, so you're going to get the Barbara Walters of MMA. I'm sorry. My show is so different than anybody else's. It's more about you, you know, than anything else. I'm not going to sit there and try to corner you somewhere, but I'm going to take you on a bunch of different journeys, if you don't mind. You know, the
perfect
thing that admires, you know, I admire most about you. And a lot of people put that out there, and I think it's an unfair assumption, you know, because you see all these quotes. Swayze has to compete in a sport full of male-dominated aspects. You know, but what did it mean for you to realize that you could hold your own with the men? What did it mean for you to realize that your job isn't gender-based?
Yeah, gosh, it's an incredible feeling. It gave me a lot of empowerment. You know, I never before thought that I could, you know, initially make it in a male-dominated industry, just because you hear so many, you know, negative naysayers of like, oh, you're never going to make it. You're never going to make it. You know, this isn't, you know, it's cut men for a reason. It's not cut women. And I feel super empowered. And thank you for wording it that way, that, you know, I can hold my own, and I feel that I have shown that I can handle it and hold my own as well in a male-dominated industry.
See, it's kind of cool, because I'm one of the guys that will interview the cut man, the promoter, the fighter, everybody. So I believe everybody in the sport deserves equal time on my show. I've interviewed some of the greatest cut men in the world. Actually, one of the greatest cut men in the world is a two-time show sponsor, that being Jacob Stitch Duran. You know, how true is the fact that when you wanted to go down this path, that you took to the internet and you found some videos by Jacob that, you know, some say truly inspired you?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he was definitely, you know, a legend of the sport and of being a cut man. And I learned so much even just from his videos. You know, I never even knew a place to start until I looked on YouTube and saw his videos. You know, it gave me a foundation of, you know, how to wrap hands, because being a cut man isn't just about stopping cuts between rounds. I mean, it's a full circle. You have to be able to wrap hands, and that's what you're going to do first when you aspire to be a cut man or a cut woman. And, yeah, his videos helped me grow and gave me a place to start.
That's righteous. You know, a lot of people don't understand the full aspect of what you do. And it's kind of cool, because I do. I mean, I've been a photographer for 24 years in the sport. But when you really look at what you do, you're a lifesaver. I mean, people don't understand that thought, and they will in a second. But your job is to keep the fighter in the fight. You've got X amount of seconds to stop the bleeding, clean up the fighter, because at any given time, the doctor, the ref, could stop the fight. How hard is it for a person of your stature to maintain and be able to keep the fighter in the fight?
You know, each situation has its own set of challenges. You know, each cut is so different. And when you go in there, you know, anything can happen. Like you said, it's not up to us whether that fight, you know, continues. It's no matter how good of work we do, there is always a doctor watching. The ref is always watching. And they're looking out for that fighter's safety as well. So it's such an intense environment in there, knowing you basically have like 45 seconds to stop that cut and, you know, keep that fighter, you know, in the fight. And same goes for us too. Like, you're as good as your last fight. With us, it's like you're as good as your last cut. You know, like, if you have a terrible night and just aren't closing stuff very well, like, you know, that doesn't look good on you. And even though, you know, some of the best cutmen in the world, you're not necessarily always going to stop every cut. You know, everyone bleeds differently, all the sorts of things. So it's high pressure, high stress, but it's the most rewarding part of the whole job.
Yeah, I like that. You know, there's a side of you that I don't think very many people know and I admire, because you work 6 days a week in the post office and you get one day off to do the fights. You know, when you look at that aspect of it, and then you go back and you find earlier quotes that the energy, you know, once you felt that energy, you were hooked. You know, what does this truly add to Swayze Valentine? Because you have given so much of your life and of who you are for a job that, as you, I guess the quote you said, a woman's got to hustle to stay in the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so
yeah, for sure.
How much does that define and reflect on how much your passion is given to the sport?
I think it says everything. I mean, being the first woman to do it, I mean, takes a lot. You know, I've been through a lot of, you know, negative situations and things like that, and to be able to just push through. If I didn't have a passion for it, there's no way I would have made it, you know, one day in there, let alone, you know, made it to the level of UFC, for example. You definitely have to hustle, and it's a tough sport. You have to stay relevant, and the only way to do that would, you know, you have to have a passion for it, because it's tough in there. You know, a lot of people think that once you make it to the top, you know, it gets easier, and that could not be further from the truth. I mean, you are just, you know, looked at under a microscope, and every move is criticized, and you just have to be on top of your game. And again, you have to have a passion to keep you in it, for sure.
Oh yeah. Me and Big Dan Mergliotta, he was on one of my shows one time, and oh, we just laughed about it, because back in the early days when we got started, we would get hired to do an event, but we would pay for our own airfare to get there, pay for our own hotel, and sometimes buy our own ticket to get into the event for an event that we were
yep.
hired to do, with hopes that we would get paid. And nine times
exactly.
out of ten, we
didn't
get paid.
Yep, and, nailed it.
Oh, it's so true, but, you know, we love this sport, and we love what we do, and God, it just engulfs us. But one thing that's special about cut people is the fighter becomes your children. You know, what take me to a moment that has truly defined Swayze Valentine? That, you know, you look at Stitch, he talked about the moment that defined him was the Vladimir Klitschko fight, when he looked up at him and said, "You can call me son." What was Swayze Valentine's defining moment in the sport?
You know what? I feel I've had several defining moments, but I'd say my most defining moment was actually a couple weekends ago. I was able to work my first UFC main event after almost 7 years. And I feel that was like my defining moment, you know, like I've actually made it. And even though I've been in, you know, with the UFC, for example, for 7 years, that moment was a full circle. You know, I finally was able to do every fight on that card, you know, from bottom to the top. And I literally worked every fight, and there was 12 of them on that card. And it was just like such an amazing feeling to just finally complete that circle.
Yeah. See, here's where the show kind of takes a little bit of a twist and a turn. you're going to get used to it. No, it's because I just like to share who you are. You know, it's like you get your favorite actor or musician or whatever, and you get to ask them the questions that you want, that you think other people want to hear. But what was life like for a young Swayze Valentine?
Life was an adventure. Let's see. I grew up off-grid, basically, in Alaska. So, you know, I grew up, you know, without running water, electricity, things like that. We had to, you know, in Alaska, you know, there's 9 months of snow and ice, so we had to go chop our own wood just to get, you know, our fire stocked so we can stay warm. And I remember my dad would always take bricks and put them in the hot fire stove and heat them up for a couple of hours. So then when we went to bed, we could stay warm through the night. We'd put like a towel over and put it at the bottom of our beds. And, you know, it just, I've just had so many experiences, you know, growing up, and we always moved around a lot. And a lot of people think that that was stressful as a kid, but really it's like, man, I enjoyed seeing new things all the time, you know, and I think that kind of even trails on to my adulthood. Like I can kind of get bored of things easily and I need a change of scenery. But yeah, I just had a pretty normal, well, maybe not normal childhood. I guess not everyone lives off grid, but it was just a fun time growing up, and I just enjoyed it.
See, I'm gonna catch you by surprise. Not very many people know what a fish wheel is, or you know how they operate. I happen to not live very far from you, actually. I actually lived in Nenana, Alaska, for about 7 years of my life. Yeah, and I love it. I miss it. You know, and it's funny because I bring on the polar bear, Paul Verlins, who was an Alaska native, and we all miss it so much. You know, these people down here in the lower 48, they have no clue. I mean, Alaska,
I know, a
like,
lot of people are like, what is the lower 48? It's like, that's what you want.
Well, it's true, though. I miss Alaska so much. I mean, the Upper Peninsula in Michigan is kind of close, but it'll never be Alaska. You know, I used to sit on the back of a fish wheel with a little Inuit Indian guy. And if you don't know what a fish wheel is, imagine a windmill turns sideways and the water turns it and it catches the fish and it throws it in a little trough in the back of a little wooden raft. And then that's what they eat all winter because they cure it all summer. You know, Swayze, a lot of things about you are so tremendous, you know, and with that comes people that have instilled great knowledge in us. They have given us the advice that we've needed. They give us that word of encouragement, that little nudge, or even that little kick in the ass when life is looking down on us. Who would you say was a key factor in the creation of Swayze Valentine?
You know, I have to say, to be honest, my parents. They've instilled work ethic, everything, you know, just life choices, everything. They've just instilled so many things in me. And anytime I need that swift kick in the ass or something, I call them up and, you know, and they'll be like, no, maybe you shouldn't do this. Or, you know what? Yes, you can. You've done this. You're strong enough. They're my voice of reassurance and my voice of calm. And that's where I'd have to say where my encouragement comes from.
You know, Swayze, it's fight night. You're in the hotel room getting ready to go down. And you go to grab your stuff off the dresser. And for a brief moment, you look up and you get a reflection of yourself in the mirror. Who do you see?
I see a very strong, confident woman. It's taken me a while to get there, but I do. I look at myself and I think, wow, look at all the stuff you accomplished. Like, you're here. And it there's no better feeling.
Right. Yeah, because one part of your life, and you're not, you're not ashamed of yourself, but you realized it wasn't for you, you know. You wanted to be in this sport so bad, and you realized you couldn't just jump right in. And a lot of us that want to get in this sport, we realize that real quick, that we can't just jump right in. It's kind of you got to earn the spot. But you were a ring girl for a while, and it was probably one of the most uncomfortable aspects for you in the sport. Now that you look back over the shoulder and see all the things that you had to do, all the hurdles you had to jump, how proud of you are you of your accomplishment? I can't even speak tonight. How proud of you are you of your accomplishments? Because truly, you are the only female cut person in the UFC, which is the largest organization in the world, you're doing something that nobody else has ever done. So when you look over your shoulder, how proud of you are you, of your accomplishments?
I am so proud. Like I said, I never thought, you know, that I could accomplish what I accomplished. Like, meaning I didn't know if I would have, you know, because there was times going through this journey that I wanted to quit. Many, many, many times that I want to quit. And there was just this deep gnawing drive inside of me of like, you got to keep going. You have to keep going. Like, don't stop. You didn't come this far to quit now. And I'm just so proud of myself that I didn't give up in all those hundreds of times that I wanted to, you know, all those times that, like you went through, you're buying your own plane ticket, you're going into debt to chase a dream that you have no idea what the outcome is going to be because nobody has done it before, meaning a female, you know, in my journey. And I didn't know if I would be successful. I always knew deep down that I would be. That was the drive that kept me going, but I never had a guarantee that it was going to work or that I'd ever get a paying gig or that, you know, when I first got my first show, which was my first pro event, was Invicta. And that was like the first event that ever paid for me to go out. And I felt amazing that somebody paid for my flight and my hotel for the first time to come and do what I love.
Yeah. Isn't it? It's wonderful, isn't it? You finally like,
yeah.
You know, people don't get it, you know, because especially like I'm a photographer. So it's like before I used to say, okay, you could pay me at the end of the night. And then the end of the night come and there's nobody around.
Yeah,
so now
they bounce.
Yeah, so I'm like, now, hey, you got to pay me up front, bro. I mean, that's the only way it's going to work for me. But I just recently retired, like I said, after 24 years. And Joe on the show, Joe Stevenson, he said, it was probably one of the smartest things I ever did. He said, you know, he wished more people would because I'm at the top of my game right now. And I'm 56 years old, and I can't lean over the apron like I used to. I can't, you know, do the stool like I used to. I'm an amputee, and, you know, I'm missing my left leg, so things aren't as easy on me as most. I love this sport, but I think it was the best thing for me to walk away on top because I would rather do that than be an afterthought. But,
right.
Swayze, it took you 10 years to get the opportunity, you know, in the UFC. Take me back.
Yeah.
Tell me what that moment felt like for you working your first UFC gig.
Oh, man. It was the goal of my journey. I mean, I still remember the date, the time, who called me. I mean, it was February 22nd, you know, 2014. I got that call that they wanted to give me a chance and have me work two shows. UFC 170, Ronda Rousey was on the card. And that was my first one. And I'm like, nothing like doing your first UFC event and having it be, you know, a motherfucking pay-per-view, you know? It's like, oh, my gosh. Crazy pressure, right? Your first one, first woman, and I'm going to be in a pay-per-view. Okay, let's do this. It was the most amazing feeling. I remember I was jumping up and down. I hung up the phone. I screamed. I drove to my dad's work, ran out, and I'm like, I'm going to be in the UFC, Mom. It was like the coolest experience ever. My mom was with me. Oh, and I cried, and it was just amazing that I had made it to that point. And, I'll never forget it. It's something that's super special in my heart, and no matter what happens, if I was fired tomorrow or quit tomorrow or whatever it may be, you know, I was the first and no one can ever take that away. And I would never give up any of the experiences in my journey for that.
Yeah, I mean, it's weird because we're in the inner working. So I 100% feel you, you know, you don't have much time away from the sport. You know, to my listeners, I wasn't joking when I said she works 6 days a week in the post office just so she can do this. You know, the passion that you exude is tremendous. But how hard is it physically to maintain a full-time job 6 days a week and, you know, still do what you love?
It's exhausting, but I do what I have to do so I can do what I love. And, you know, I just make the best balance I can. And to me, it doesn't feel like two jobs. You know, the post office seems like way more work. Of course, I'm there 6 days out of the week, but it's just like, that's just what I have to do. And so when I get to just spend my one day off doing what I love, it just makes it all worth it.
You know, you've worked so many events, and I'm going to kind of put you on the spot. I love doing that. Well, I mean, because we all have our memorable moments. You know, we all have that one fight in the sport that really meant more to us than the other. You know, what fight would that be for you, and what was your takeaway from it?
That is a tough one, because there's so many times I've had just amazing memories and great fights. Gosh, I can think of three right off the top of my head, but if I have to say, so obviously the most meaningful would be my very first one, you know, UFC 170. That was the most special. You know, I took so much from that. It was like a fairy tale the whole night. It was just, that is number one. And I'd have to say a very close second was, you know, like I said, a couple weekends ago, you know, I got to work, you know, Watterson versus Hill. And, you know, that was the girls' first main event together, you know, fighting. And it was my very first main event. So that, again, was a very huge, huge moment for me.
Yeah, you know, it kind of was for me, too, even though I wasn't there, because Watterson, I shot her in the early days of Invicta. You know, matter of fact, I even shot when Watterson lost to Henrika DiBurcio way back, I think it was Invicta 7 or Invicta 10. I can't remember back that far.
Whoa, long time.
And then, oh, yeah. Well, I was with the Invicta promotion. I think they're on 41 now, 34 out of 41 fights. So, you know, I got to see all these girls come up. I got to see Angela Hill. I got to see Andrea KGB Lee. I got to see Megan Anderson. You know, what's it like now for you? Because it really has changed for you. It was completely male. And then, like you said, your first fight, you know, was really kind of about the time that females were being introduced to the sport. So what's it like now for you to see an influx of female fighters into the UFC?
I love it. And I think it's just made fights in general just more wonderful. I mean, they were already great before. And then now, you know, they're adding the talent that these women have. And they're just incredible, strong, powerful women. And I just, that's one thing I love so much, you know, about UFC and Bellator and all these other places, you know, really taking women on board, because we have so much to offer as well. And I love it. And that's what I love so much about working other events too, you know, like Invicta. It was super special time too, because when I worked on one of the cards, you know, it was the very first time it was literally an all female promotion. You know, you had the female matchmaker, you had a female cut woman, you had, you know, all female fighters. Like, that was the first time in, you know, even Invicta history that it was literally an all female, you know, like, setup. So that was super special. And then seeing the women come up from Invicta, you know, you build these relationships with these fighters, you know, before they get to the top tier. And so when they come in, and like, I see these women and these guys, you know, that I've worked with on, you know, other pro circuits or even the amateur circuit, it's like, dude, you made it. Like, it's so good to see you here. You know, like, it's all, you know, MMA in general, it's just a huge family. And it doesn't matter where you're at, you know, you're all there for the same reason. You're all there for the same love and same passion. And it's just neat. It's like seeing relatives you haven't seen in a while, you know, when they get there. So it's just super fun and special.
Yeah, it truly is. Well, that's what's kind of killed me over the last 8.5 months is I'm an introvert that works in the extrovert world. I really love being by myself. Thank God somebody else gets it, you know, because we go and we go to these fights and there's anywhere from 10 to 25,000 people. And, you know, I look back to when I was going really strong and I shot the last 11 fights with Kimbo Slice and some very good memories. And I was set to interview his son, Baby Slice, and that's the night that Kimbo passed. I sat back and he came on the show for 4 minutes and then he left. Baby Slice did. I didn't want him on to begin with at all, but he ended up coming back on 2 weeks later. But it made me realize one thing about this sport. And it's like you said, the relationships. And me and Joe Stevenson talked about this. It was meant to be 360 for me and Baby Slice. You know, knowing his father, being able to tell him stories, being able to share different aspects of when I was in the limousine van with him traveling from fight to fight and getting to know the man. You know, like he said on my show one time, Don, you've told stories about my dad that only my dad would know. When you look at your career, let's say you had to write down a favorite thought from a sport on a piece of paper to be put into a time capsule for future generations to open up and get a look into your head, what would that statement be?
Oh my gosh, there's so many. You know, I love quotes. There'd probably be some famous quote in there about not giving up and never quitting and doing what you love. It's just so special to find your passion and be able to do your passion.
I like that. You know, I'm going to be cruel and take you even one step deeper because I can. It's my show. I've asked world champions this, you know, and I really reserve this question for world champions. But I think you could really answer these in a more definitive way than most. What does pride, passion, and perseverance truly mean to Swayze Valentine?
Dash, I think it all needs, man, that's a tough one. They're all such great characteristics. I mean, you have to have all three to be successful. And, I mean, you have to have pride to hang in there. And perseverance, you have to be able to push through the hard times and you have to have confidence. It all just feels to me, it just feels powerful.
Yeah. That's a great way to put it. You know, I love it because I knew you would give me a different answer. You know, Kung Li was, that's martial law. That's what it means to be truly mean, you know, be a martial artist. And then you've got like Todd Medina, who says he didn't realize what those three words meant until he stepped into an octagon and got hit for the first time. So it's like everybody has a different story. The reason I kind of reserve that for champions is because it's kind of a deep question in a lot of ways. And you kind of see how the show goes now. I'm going to ask you a few more questions, and then we'll kind of wrap things up. But you kind of see I want to share you. I don't want this show to be about me. So take me, my listeners, on a whimsical journey, I guess you would say. You know, what was the most, I don't know how to, I got the thought in my head, but I don't even know how to word this because I'm trying to be polite, but this is the sport.
Well, the sport isn't necessarily, you know, polite, so it's okay.
Hey, that's cool. No, but I'll change a question because I don't want to be misdirected or misconceived. But, you know, we learn a lot from the hustle of the sport. It teaches us. It shows us, and you proved it can be accomplished. You know, what does it mean for Swayze Valentine to continue to gain notoriety, continue to gain a fan base, and continue to learn and be cherished by the sport?
Gosh, it holds a lot of responsibility. I try not to even look outside myself and do it for any reason other than for my heart and my passion. I mean, in this industry, you know, you have to hustle. If you want that job, you got to hustle for it. You're not just going to be given it, even though you're the first female in the UFC, for example. Like, there's promotions that haven't worked in years because I haven't fought for my spot, you know, and it's like, there's already people there, you know. It's always a hustle. Again, you have to stay relevant. If you're not staying relevant, you know, every aspect of it is a hustle, and it's really hard to explain unless you're in it. But if there's something you ever really wanted, you know, there's nothing that's going to stop you from getting that. And that's where that hustle comes in.
Yeah, and see, I fully understand that. And these young and upcomers don't understand it when I get a 4-foot section on the side of the cage and there's five of them crammed into a 4-foot section. They look at me like, how do you rate? But you know what? I earned that real estate. You know, I earned that spot. You know, so it's going to lead me to my next question, because it's a very insightful one, because it truly shows how much the sport appreciates you. What did it mean for you to be one of the first called back to the sport we've been in, you know, quarantine, we've been in isolation, the sport hasn't been around, but you were one of the first cut persons to get a call back. What did that mean for you?
It means everything. You know, like I said, this is my passion, and the UFC right now is kind of was the first jump back into it after this quarantine. And to be on their list, you know, to work, I mean, it shows that they really trust me. And that means the most. You know, it's one thing, you know, being good at your job and all that kind of stuff, but you need to be trusted, and that means so much.
Oh, yeah. They believe in you. They believe in you.
Right.
That's what I'm getting at. And that's the great thing about you, and that's why I'm honored to have you on the show, is because you have proven yourself. You have shown the sport that you belong to be there. You know, a lot of people in the sport, they don't understand what it's like to be in the bubble. You know what it's like to be in the bubble. Take us just through a quick synopsis of what it's like to be in the bubble for a fight.
Oh, man. Like, there's so much intensity. Even though right now that we don't have, like, an audience, there's still the intensity is still there. It's never left. You know, you're sitting cage side and you see, you know, you're watching your fighter every second of that round. And even down to like the last second, you know, your fighter could get cracked over the eye, you know, the eye with an elbow, and then boom, he's pouring blood. And so you just, you know, you hear that bell ring to let you know that that it's over. You go in, you wait for that cage door to open. Once that cage door opens, it just feels like a flood. You just book it in there. You get to your fighter, you get your fighter to the corner, and you just start working. And, you know, you got a whole 45 seconds to get it done, get that fighter to the next round. And, you know, then they do the, you know, the clap, and, you know, you got seconds out, and you just grab your stuff and you bounce back to your seat, and you just sit there and you just glue your eyes, you know, on your fighter again. And it's, you don't relax until you're at the end of, you know, the third round or the fifth round if it's a championship fight. And it's like, it's so, you're so exhausted mentally by the end of, you know, that third round. And it's like, oh, thank goodness I get a break till the next walkout.
You know, I'm so glad you came on the show tonight. I really hope you enjoy it. I've got one more question for you, and then we're going to kind of wrap things up. But you know what? Being that you have created and still are the only woman cut person in the UFC, like I said a couple times before on the show, you're the foundation of the sport. What type of legacy would Swayze Valentine like to leave, not only for her family, but for her friends?
Gosh, I hold so much power and responsibility in it. You know, I just hope people can look at me as an inspiration, to be honest. I hope I leave a legacy of inspiration, and I inspire men, women, whomever, to either, you know, follow their dream, no matter what it may be, regardless of, you know, any hurdles that you got to jump. It's just stick in there and do what you love. I mean, there's nothing. I mean, they say, you know, you don't work a day in your life if you're doing something you love, and that's so, so true. And you're not truly happy till you know that you're doing something you love. So I just hope I can leave a legacy of inspiration for sure.
Well, you certainly have, my friend. You know, I wanted you on the show a long time ago, and I just never had the cojones to ask. You know, it's funny because I tell everybody else, you know, they're like, well, how did you get to? Well, I know them, but, you know, how do you get people? I said, man, you don't know unless you ask. And so one day I was like, you know what? I'm just going to ask. I've had every other cut person in the sport on. I'm just going to ask. And you agreed to come on the show. And I was like, oh, crap. Now I got to interview her. It's fun, though. You know, this sport, you nailed it right on the head. And so did Professor Joe Stevenson. You know, Joe Daddy's my favorite. He said, we don't pick our friends.
Love.
Or we don't pick our family. You know, it picks us. And this sport is a tremendous aspect of that. You know, without this sport, I wouldn't know excitement, what fulfillment is, or just have the brothers and sisters that I've created has been one of the number one takeaways for me from the sport. Would you say the relationships that you've acquired have truly been the greatest takeaway from the sport for you?
Absolutely. You know, like I said, this sport is a family. And, you know, Joe Daddy says it perfectly, and I was going to say it earlier, you know, that it's like, this is my passion, but I felt that it picked me, you know, and it's just the relationships you make are lifetime, and they are just lifelong, and they're beautiful, and that's the best part of this whole thing.
It truly is. You know, my friend, I know we don't do it enough in life, so I give each and every person that comes on my show an opportunity. You know, there's, like I said earlier, there's those that don't walk in front of us, they don't walk behind us. They walk side by side with us through thick and thin. They're the ones that give us that word of encouragement, the ones that give us that nudge. And we don't often say thank you enough. So I'm going to pass the mic to you before we kind of wrap things up here. Who in your life that has truly been there for you in that intent that would you like to give thanks to?
Gosh, I would love, obviously, thanks to my parents. I mean, if I didn't have their support, I would not be where I am today with my passion and making my dreams come true. So to my parents, you know, thank you so much for everything, being there always and watching my kids so I can go to Vegas and all these places. And of course, all of my supporters and my fans, everyone, you know, who supports me, and it means the whole world. You know, you get a lot of people who don't support you, so it's so nice having those that do, and I am so grateful for every single one of you, so thank you.
Well, we're grateful for you. You know, Swayze, it was an honor to have you on the show. I was nervous tonight, I'll be honest with you. I've interviewed everybody from Mark Coleman to you name it, and here I get you on and I get tongue-tied, but hey, it happens. It's a live show. You know, I'll get razzed about it later, but that's all good. You know, you're such a tremendous aspect to the sport, and what you do is sheer perfection. You know, a lot of people truly don't understand what a cut person does in this sport. And like you said earlier, it's from hand wrapping to taking care of the fighters in between and just being there and taking care of them like they're your children. You know, That's tremendous. I'm a photographer. I could never do what you do. That takes a lot more heart and determination than I think I could ever muster up. So you're to be commended on that.
Thank you.
I'm going to pass the mic to you. If you have any sponsors, friends or family, social media sites, or just anything else you'd like to add to the show before we kind of wrap things up, the floor is yours, Swayze.
Yes. I want to thank, again, friends, family, fans, thank you so much. You can follow me on, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Everything is just Swayze Valentine. I'm here to answer any questions. If you just want to stop in and say hello, anything, I'm here for everything. So thank you so much for your time tonight. Thanks for letting, me tell my story and being a platform, for us to share, our experiences. It means a lot.
I appreciate it. Maybe next time I won't be so nervous and tongue-tied.
Even guessed you were nervous. It'd be great.
It's funny because, I've been doing this for 17 years, and it's happened just a couple times. But, my friend, I'm proud of what you've accomplished. I'm proud of the road you've traveled. Keep showing the world that there are no limits because you truly have given the sports world, people like me, something to look up to because you've proven yourself, not just to the sport, but to the world. And with that being said, I'm proud of you. Keep rocking the cage, girl. You deserve it.
Oh, thank you so much. My heart's so happy.
Thank you so much for coming on. I can't wait to have you back on again. Until then, you have a good night, my friend.
You too. We'll talk to you later. Bye.
All right. Bye-bye. Ladies and gentlemen, that was Swayze Valentine. Here we go. I was able to hang up. We're having a little technical difficulties with the board. I want to thank my sponsors once again. Finished MMA, Cut Man for Hire, and Bite Me Mouth Guards. Tremendous people. But Finished MMA, I appreciate you. Without you, the show wouldn't continue. On that note, I want to wish everybody a tremendous evening. Have a good night, and God bless. And you know what? We're going to go out with a little bit of a patriotic song. Here's some Lee Greenwood for you.
Just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. 'Cause the flag still stands for freedom and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today, 'cause there ain't no doubt I love this.